Hey friends, welcome back to Anti-Visions. Well, I'm convinced that our polarized society is being torn apart by forces that aren't what we might believe them to be. Typically, we assume that it's the Republican or the Democrat divide in politics. It's the right wing versus the left wing, the vaxxer versus the anti-vaxxer, the woke versus the anti-woke, and the list goes on. But what are the underlying forces and paradigms that aren't immediately obvious to the human eye? I believe that if we pay attention to patterns in every facet of society, whether politics, science, medicine, technology, media, even economics, we will begin to see these underlying forces. When I was a kid, someone gave me one of those computer-generated optical illusion pictures. It looked like a bunch of different sized small squares and rectangles overlapping one another, and they were for the most part various shades of brown. It almost hurt your eyes to look at the thing, but if you were to stare into it and let your eyes adjust, you would begin to see a 3D image emerge. Mine was a couple of wolves howling in the foreground with some mountains behind them. It took me a while to see the image the first time. But, it was kind of like a Rubik's Cube. You wondered if you would ever see the pattern. But then, once I finally saw it, I couldn't unsee it. Every time, within a moment or two, I could see the image. And I believe that the Great Reset reveals the contours of some of the patterns that undergird our current social dilemma. It takes a little bit of time getting familiar with some of the concepts, but it's critical for us to understand whether we're interested in economics or not. So what is the Great Reset? It's an initiative of the World Economic Forum. Well, what's the World Economic Forum? This is from their website. The World Economic Forum is the International Organization for Public-Private Cooperation. Although I can't dig into that particular phrase, it's beyond the scope of this episode, that idea of public-private partnerships is so critical in understanding what's going on, so there will be some time I'll devote to that in later podcasts. On the website, it continues to say, the forum engages the foremost political, business, cultural, and other leaders of society to shape global, regional, and industry agendas. And they're not kidding, because some of the most powerful people in the world are part of the World Economic Forum. So on the website, it says it was established in 1971. It doesn't say, but it was established by Klaus Schwab, who is the executive chairman. And it was established as a nonprofit foundation, and it's headquartered in Geneva, Switzerland. It's independent, impartial, and not tied to any special interests. I just have to laugh really hard at what that says. But anyway, it says, our activities are shaped by a unique institutional culture founded on the stakeholder theory, which asserts that an organization is accountable to all parts of society. That other idea of stakeholder, they talk about stakeholder capitalism, I'll just barely touch on that today. Now, this group hosts their annual conference in Davos, Switzerland, in the winter. They just had it this past week. It might even still be going on right now. I'm not sure. But you might have heard of it before. They talk about all of the big, most powerful world leaders and the politicians and the business moguls all gathering together in Davos every year for this conference. And this year's conference opened with a speech from none other than China's president, Xi Jinping. Klaus Schwab, the executive chairman of the World Economic Forum, groveled before and lauded President Xi as he introduced him. It was really quite a sight, and I'll make sure to post it on the website so that you can see a clip of Klaus introducing President Xi. So speaking of power in the economic sector, here are some of the companies that partner with the World Economic Forum, which you might recognize. Companies like Google, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, IBM, Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, Hey, I thought that those guys just made sugar water, right? Facebook, Microsoft, Dell, Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer. Wait a minute. Big Pharma? The guys who are making that vaccine thing? There's BlackRock, which you might have never heard of, but it's the most powerful, wealthy, influential company in the world. Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Citibank, JP Morgan Chase. We're talking capitalists, the biggest businesses, the wealthiest businesses. This doesn't even mention Jeff Bezos, Amazon. But the World Economic Forum has become one of the most powerful and influential NGOs in the world. That's their fancy little term for non-governmental organizations, which at this point, the World Economic Forum, in my estimation, is far from anything non-governmental. It's right next to the UN, and honestly, and I'm talking about in terms of status, power, influence, and honestly, I kind of think that that the World Economic Forum has more sway than the UN does. Now, I used to think that the UN had no real power or influence, that it was pretty much a joke, a bunch of talk, but no bite, no power, no real authority. But while so many, especially in the US, imagined this to be the case, because, you know, after all, we are invincible, the sands of power and influence were slowly shifting and rearranging while very few even took notice. Now, as I mentioned before, Klaus Schwab is the executive chairman of the World Economic Forum. And once COVID-19 struck, he began to declare the Great Reset from the rooftops. I mean, from the mountaintops. He said, "To achieve a better outcome, the world must act jointly and swiftly to revamp all aspects of our societies and economies, from education to social contracts and working conditions. In short, we need a great reset of capitalism." Of course, it might be best to hear directly from Klaus Schwab for ourselves, especially so you can hear his voice. So here's just a quick clip.
"Now is a historical moment, a time not only to fight severe virus, but to shape the system for the need for the post-corona era. But we have another choice. We can build a new social contract. In short, we need a great reset."
It's interesting how Klaus and his World Economic Forum cronies frame the Great Reset, because they make it sound like it's a new idea, as though necessity, the mother of invention, was behind this concept due to the pressures of the pandemic. But the reality is that Klaus Schwab had been pining for a Great Reset for years, long before COVID came along. This idea is nothing new, and he, along with many of the World Economic Forum leaders, have repeatedly declared that the pandemic is a grand opportunity to instate the Great Reset. It's a plan they've had awaiting in the wings for quite some time, just waiting for the right circumstances to present themselves. The phrase Great Reset was coined by an author in the early 2000s, and by 2014, Schwab was integrating this term into the heart and vision of the World Economic Forum. 2020's COVID crisis is hardly the birthplace nor inspiration for the Great Reset. Let's not forget the infamous article, which you may have heard about, that the World Economic Forum published back in 2020 about their vision for the year 2030. The idea that you'll own nothing and be happy about it. I'll put a link to Forbes magazine with the text of this article in the notes section. And here's just a few things that it says. "Welcome to the year 2030. Welcome to my city, or should I say our city. I don't own anything. I don't own a car. I don't own a house. I don't own any appliances or any clothes. It might seem odd to you, but it makes perfect sense for us in this city. Everything you considered a product has now become a service. We have access to transportation, accommodation, food, and all the things we need in our daily lives. One by one, all of these things became free, so it ended up not making sense for us to own much. In our city, we don't pay any rent because someone else is using our free space whenever we do not need it. My living room is used for business meetings when I'm not there. Once in a while, I get annoyed about the fact that I have no real privacy. Nowhere I can go and not be registered. I know that somewhere everything I do, think, and dream of is recorded. I just hope that nobody will use it against me. So those are just some of the things said in the article, and I find it extremely disturbing, as do most people, the idea of not owning anything. And of course, they turn it on you as though it's this moral thing, like, well, why are you so possessive? But there are so many implications to this. Somebody owns it. Who owns it? Well, it's going to be the really wealthy elite people in the World Economic Forum who are going to own it. And, you know, another thing, it seems to me that when you look back at history, most people were either slaves or serfs, and those people didn't own anything. So I'm not really interested in going back to a world where I own nothing. Now, of course, they make it sound like, well, it's all free, but we know there's nothing really free. Even as I talked about in surveillance capitalism, all of these services that Google and these other companies offer you for free are not actually really free. And there's also a shift in the power balance. So once somebody owns everything, they can shut those valves off really fast if you don't operate or behave the way that they demand. So really, it's a world of slavery. It's a world of serfdom. And I know that sounds extremely dystopian, but I believe it's extremely realistic. So I'm going to play a little clip from one of the World Economic Forum's videos on the Great Reset. And just notice how they always rhetorically use the problems of the world to present the solutions that they have.
With everything falling apart, we can reshape the world in ways we couldn't before. Ways that better address so many of the challenges we face. And that's why so many are calling for a Great Reset. A Great Reset? That sounds more like buzzword bingo masking some nefarious plan for world domination. Hands up, this kind of slogan hasn't gone down well. But all we really want to say is that we all have an opportunity to build a better world. And it's not surprising that people who've been disenfranchised by a broken system and pushed even further by the pandemic will suspect global leaders of conspiracy. But the world's not that simple. Every one of us has differing priorities, values, and ideas. That's part of why solutions are so hard to come by, and why we all need to be involved in the decision making. Because whether it's politicians, CEOs, academics, activists, or you, we're all about getting people together, even those you may not like, to sit down at the table and develop solutions that work for all of us. But
we need enormous trust between the private sector and the public sector for this to actually work. That trust is hard to come by.
It's time for people to work together, listen to each other, and build this trust so we can move towards a better world. And we really need one.
Well, there are so many things that I could comment on, but I'm sure that you can fill in the blanks. I do find the point about trust very interesting, because the very trust that has definitely eroded in the West, that people have in our institutions and way of life, is the very trust that they want. And yet it's tactics of institutions like the World Economic Forum that have actually been the cause of the erosion of trust in the West. So I'm going to play a little bit more of that video, and just notice that they're talking about wealth and poverty. This is an example of what I'm talking about, where they're actually the ones who have created the problems that now they're presenting solutions for. That's genius, isn't it?
See, at the start of 2020, 1% of the world's population owned 44% of the wealth. And since the start of the pandemic, billionaires have increased theirs by more than 25%, whilst 150 million people fell back into extreme poverty.
So wait a minute. The billionaires at Davos who gather at the World Economic Forum who want the Great Reset are complaining because the pandemic has made the billionaires actually even more wealthy than they were before. And somehow, this is a problem of the everyday American or European, and their solutions are going to solve everything. However, it's the same people who got filthy rich off of the pandemic. And I'm not saying that they caused the pandemic. I'm not in that camp. But they have gotten filthy rich off of it. Do you think that they really are trying to gain and garner more power and money so that they can then give it back? Here's an article. This is Forbes Billionaires List in March 2020. It says the net worth of the world's top 10 billionaires has more than doubled during the pandemic to $1.5 trillion, more than doubled. At the top of the list is Elon Musk. His is up 1,016%. He's at $294.2 billion. Now, he's kind of a different monster when it comes to the Great Reset and all of these things. He's one that I have to kind of deal with on the side. I like the guy. I want to like the guy, but he's a different story. But then second, you've got Jeff Bezos, who is up 67%, the owner of Amazon, extremely involved in the Great Reset, very anti-liberal, anti-democratic. I don't care what he says, because, you know, he does own the Washington Post, so they can publish all the propaganda that he wants. But let's look here. You've got Bill Gates up 31%. Larry Ellison. So Bill Gates, I think Microsoft, he's extremely involved in the Great Reset. Larry Ellison, Larry Page, Sergey Brin, all three, the original founders and owners of Google, up. Larry Ellison is up 99%. Okay, can you imagine 100% profit? Larry Page, 125%. Sergey Brin, 125%. Mark Zuckerberg, up 101%. Warren Buffett, up 40%. These are the same guys who got filthy rich when over a million businesses in the United States, small businesses, were shut down because of the pandemic. Small little local hardware stores weren't allowed to operate because they weren't essential, but Home Depot could, and Walmart could, and of course Amazon got filthy rich. Target, the big companies, there were no repercussions for them. They're all part of the Great Reset. This is not a conspiracy. It's right in front of our face. We watched it happen. We watched the big businesses allowed to be open and thrive while all of the small businesses were crushed. And you might say, oh no, it was just to flatten the curve. More than 60% of those businesses never reopened. That is the economic engine of the United States. And so here we've got in this video, they're complaining about a poverty problem that they've actually contributed to. I can go back and look, although it's beyond the scope of this, and look at the policies of the World Economic Forum and the UN and their claims to help, you know, or their pursuit of ending poverty in the world. And yet, over and over, when they regather, the wealth gap has gotten larger and larger after all of their implementation. But then they blame mainstream regular capitalism. These guys are not capitalists. They're crony capitalists, or they're maybe more like Chinese capitalists, or they're surveillance capitalists, but they're not capitalists in the traditional sense of the word. Here, just take a listen.
Capitalism, as we know it, is dead. This obsession that we have had with maximizing profits for shareholders alone has led to incredible inequality and a planetary emergency.
So essentially, these World Economic Forum elites have had decades to implement globalism, wreak havoc on the environment, and increase the poverty gap, or the wealth gap, as they call it, and then take all of those problems and paint capitalism's face on it. Take all of those problems and paint the West's face on it and say, it was those guys that did it. Aren't they so bad? But hey, we've got the solution. And the solution is stakeholder capitalism.
But no one can do this alone. And top-down approaches won't get us anywhere. Because everything we've learned in our work has shown us that diverse voices lead to better results. And it's for these reasons that the forum talks about something called stakeholder capitalism, which would shift businesses away from just profit.
So They speak as though stakeholder capitalism will be this wonderful, transformational thing for the world. But according to Vivek Ramaswamy, the author of Woke Incorporated, an incredible book which I highly recommend, he says that stakeholder capitalism has been the dominant mode of operation for a while now. It's not something new that they want to implement. It's something that has already been implemented. In his book, he says, by 2020, stakeholder capitalism was the prevailing model of business in corporate America. Stakeholder capitalism, the trendy idea that companies should serve not just their shareholders, but also other interests and society at large, was no longer simply on the rise. It had been crowned as the governing philosophy for big business in America. Now, that's an important point that he makes, because stakeholder capitalism, the claim is, hey, look, in the past, capitalism served their shareholders, but now we serve society. Everybody's a stakeholder. Now, it sounds wonderful. It sounds utopian, but we should all know by now, utopian things usually end up in dystopia. Another thing that Ramaswamy says is 15 years ago, stakeholder capitalism might have represented a challenge to the system. Today, it is the system, and its tolerance for dissent is vanishing. Al Gore recently declared that stakeholder capitalism is, quote, the proven model for business, unquote, and that corporate executives who fail to act accordingly could be sued for violating their fiduciary duties. Mark Benioff, billionaire founder of Salesforce.com, proclaimed that shareholder capitalism is dead. Another thing that Vivek says in his book, and Vivek is an extremely successful capitalist himself. He says, rather, there's a new invisible force at work in the highest ranks of corporate America. Interesting that he says that it's an invisible force. It's one, like he says here, quote, one more nefarious. It's the defining scam of our time, one that robs you of not only your money, but your voice and your identity. The con works like a magic trick, summed up well by Michael Caine's character in the opening monologue in Christopher Nolan's movie, The Prestige. Every great magic trick consists of three parts, or acts. The first part is called the pledge. The magician shows you something ordinary, a deck of cards, a bird, or a man. The second act is called the turn. The magician takes the ordinary something and makes it to do something extraordinary. But you wouldn't clap yet, because making something disappear isn't enough. You have to bring it back. That's why every magic trick has a third act. The hardest part, the part we call the prestige. Financial success in 21st century America involves the same simple steps. First, the pledge. You find an ordinary market where ordinary people sell ordinary things. The simpler, the better. Second, the turn. You find an arbitrage in that market and squeeze the hell out of it. An arbitrage refers to the opportunity to buy something for one price and instantly sell it for a higher price to someone else. If this were a book about how to get rich quick, I'd expound on these first two steps. But the point of this book is to expose the dirty little secret underlying the third step of corporate America's act. It's prestige. Here's how it works. Pretend like you care about something other than profit and power, precisely to gain more of each. I have to personally add that this is more than just corporate America. This is a global thing. When you look at the World Economic Forum, which I haven't read all of Vivek's book, but so far I love it, yet he really seems to restrict his view to corporate America and not acknowledge that this is really a global game. So I'm not sure how much he actually talks about the World Economic Forum or the Great Reset. Something else he says, like I said, he is a very successful capitalist. He says on page 3 of his book, he says, I'm fed up with corporate America's game of pretending to care about justice in order to make money. It is quietly wreaking havoc on American democracy. It demands that a small group of investors and CEOs determine what's good for society rather than our democracy at large. This new trend has created a major cultural shift in America. It's not just ruining companies. It's polarizing our politics. It's dividing our country to a breaking point. Worst of all, it's concentrating the power to determine American values in the hands of a small group of capitalists rather than in the hands of the American citizenry at large, which is where the dialogue about social values belongs. That's not America, but a distortion of it. Now, you might say, whoa, what's he talking about, wokeism and justice? But did you notice, have you noticed since the pandemic, all of the talk of social justice and the way that massive, huge corporations have gotten involved in politics and social issues, claiming to speak on behalf of the American people? So they go into Georgia and they stand up and Delta Airlines says, I'm not okay with this voting rights bill. Or they come over and they put pressure on different groups of people because they don't believe right or they didn't say the right thing. So what's happening is now we've got a ideological, or at least corporate America has gotten involved in ideology, and we're supposed to trust that they're speaking on our behalf. And yet that's the trick of capitalism, right? They can sell us sugar water and make us believe that we wanted it. They can sell us iPhones and make us believe that we wanted it, when all along they actually conditioned the population to want it. Now they're getting involved in moral and ethical decisions and claiming to speak on behalf of America. And even if we say, hey, that doesn't represent me, who can stand against these major corporations? This is a catastrophe. And this is what the World Economic Forum is pushing for. It's not just for America, it's across the world. And so these public-private partnerships are allowing these businesses to come in and determine the actual values of the society. So they can subvert things like the United States Constitution or any other constitution or law, because through private industry, the people who have the money, the people who have the gold, are the ones who have the power, and they get to make the rules. Therefore, traditional capitalism, as much as it might seem like it benefits the greedy, actually limits the power of corporations and businesses, because it's kind of like separation of church and state, and it keeps them out of our business. So Pepsi, Coca-Cola, just sell me some sugar water. Don't tell me what values you want to implement. Don't talk to me about gender and equality and your ideas of what that might be. Vivek explains this way better than I can. He says on page 7, under the banner of stakeholder capitalism, CEOs and large investors work with ideological activists to implement radical agendas that they could never pass in Congress. He says these actors consummate the most pernicious heist of all. They steal our shared American identity. And I would add that they steal the shared European, German, Swiss, Austrian, Italian, French, you name it, identity. On page 18, he says, speaking as a former CEO myself, I'm deeply concerned that subverting this new model of capitalism demands a dangerous expansion of American corporate power that threatens to subvert American democracy. For corporations to advance social causes, they must first define which causes to prioritize and what position to take. Yet, that isn't a business judgment, it's a moral one. America was founded on the idea that we make our most important value judgments through our democratic process, where each citizen's voice is weighted equally, rather than by a small group of elites in private. It's ironic because it's these same guys who are on TV, on the news, who are constantly warning about how democracy is being eroded, or it's being stolen, or it's being subverted by misinformation or disinformation, or how we need to set up these new protocols to protect our democracies. And yet they are extremely anti-democratic. Vivek says on page 21, democracy loses twice. Corporate influence pollutes the public debate about moral questions, and social solidarity is eroded as apolitical institutions slowly disappear. Stakeholder capitalism poisons democracy, partisan politics poisons capitalism, and in the end, we are left with neither capitalism nor democracy. Wow, that is a brilliant statement. I highly recommend getting this book. It's on Audible as well if you want to listen to the Audible book, the version. If you've ever heard Vivek speak, he's often on talk shows and things like that. You can look him up on YouTube. He's a great speaker, and he's also the narrator of his own book. It's really great, very entertaining, well done. But let me go on ahead and just wrap this thing up. Just reaching back to even the first episode I did on surveillance capitalism, which I'm not considering this a third episode, but the idea of surveillance capitalism and what Shoshana Zuboff warns is a complete subversion of the democratic systems that we know and even in society and life as we know it. In the same way, we're talking about stakeholder capitalism that's pushed by the World Economic Forum, and they also use those surveillance capitalism techniques, by the way. It's the same companies, but stakeholder capitalism is equally a danger to democracy and life as we know it, society as we know it, government as we know it, freedom as we know it. So there are major changes that have happened right underneath our noses. Like Vivek talks about, it's actually not going to be implemented. It's already been implemented. Just like surveillance capitalism isn't something that in the debate, you know, maybe one day we'll get to do it. It's been happening already. And both are like diseases that haven't been detected. I mean, think about it. How does one get the population to go along with such a pitch other than change things in the dead of night while everyone's asleep? One could potentially use some of the behavior modification tactics of surveillance capitalism to nudge the population into agreement by perhaps spending massive amounts of money on selling the idea that the West is racist, and more specifically, capitalism is inherently racist. Although no one really heard that idea before the pandemic, except maybe in the cesspools of academia, it has gone mainstream and is even being taught in many public school systems across the country. All the while, the deep pockets behind this campaign remain comfortably invisible. Several years ago, my father-in-law, a very healthy man, began to have back pain. So he did therapy and took all kinds of meds in response. But then he had stomach problems, and the conclusion was that all of the meds had messed with his stomach. But then, as those symptoms got worse, the real cause was eventually discovered. It was actually stage 4 pancreatic cancer, otherwise known as the silent killer. He passed away 1 month later. Today, for those who are trying to fight the social ills of our time, I believe that we are fighting against the back pain and the stomach pain, essentially the symptoms. But all the while, the real cause lurks silent, invisible, and comfortably undetected. I sincerely believe that the Great Reset is like pancreatic cancer to our society, and we need a swift diagnosis if we're going to survive. Follow the patterns, my friends, even when they seem to be outside the bounds of what the eye perceives. And I'll leave you with that. Until next time, I'll see you again here on Anti-Visions.